Hello and welcome to Stories of Success, your listening experience for self-development. It is here where I, Volker Baluder, as your host, regularly interview interim and fractional CXOs to understand and share more about the emerging group of people that serve companies as interims in leadership positions. Join me here on Season 5 to learn more about this space and how you can become a successful interim and fractional leader. If you want to find out more about myself or what Baluder Partners can do for you in the area of sales consultancy, please visit www.baluderpartners.com. If you enjoy this podcast, please share and give me a 5-star rating. And now, without further ado, let's welcome my guest and please enjoy the show. All right, in today's episode, I welcome Tom Gleason. He's the co-founder and CEO of Scalewise. So Scalewise helps ambitious B2B tech scale-ups and accelerates growth by providing unique and flexible access to a community of world-class scale experts. Bit of a mouthful there. He's also the founding member and chair of the London chapter of Pavilion, a private community for high-growth revenue leaders. So Tom and I met through Scalewise, actually. So I got my recent job actually through Scalewise. Big fan of Scalewise, big fan of Tom. We just, before we went live, said I listened to a few podcasts he has done on, was it Sales Hacker? So Tom, welcome to my podcast, first of all.
Thanks, Volker. Yeah, really great to be here. And yeah, thanks for giving me the opportunity to come on and talk about all things fractional and interim leadership. And I'm sure we'll cover Pavilion and we'll cover Scalewise. Yeah. We may even cover Sales Impact Academy as well, which is another role that I do alongside those two. Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot about that as well. So there's, if I say you're through and through sales, so should we start by giving the listeners a bit of a background, what, you know, where your career is coming from and how you ended up, if I say running all these training and obviously Scalewise is not a training company, but, you know, helping companies to get the right salespeople in, essentially.
Sure. I suppose I stumbled into sales, as many people do. Actually, before university, I took a year out between college and uni. I decided I wanted to go and make some money rather than continue to study. I was obviously only 18 at the time, but landed in a call center, a kind of sales contact center for a company called British Gas, where there was a couple of hundred different people doing the same role as me, selling these kind of service contracts for British Gas. But there was these kind of contact centers dotted around the UK. There's probably about 800 people in total, all doing my job, and it seemed that I was actually ended up being quite good at it. I hadn't realized that I had a knack for selling. I just wanted to make some money. But I ended up, for the year that I was there, I ended up being one of the top 5 performers for 3 out of the 4 quarters. And ended up kind of winning trips. I had a 5-star trip to Amsterdam and one to Paris. And yeah, I mean, as I was 18, this was kind of an amazing experience. And I think I surprised myself that I was able to do that. But I think it was a combination of just a really good work ethic. I realized quite quickly that, you know, you had to make a lot of dials. It was a numbers game, and therefore you just had to put the effort and the dials in. But also I worked out that because we were kind of selling to consumers, it was a B2C sale, that getting in early and staying late in the office was the best time to kind of connect with people and to ultimately sell them the service contracts that we were selling. So yeah, I did that for a year. I really enjoyed it. Had those amazing experiences, and I think I probably got the bug for selling at that point. After that, I went to university, studied sports psychology, which got nothing to do with sales really, but actually it does when you think about it. A lot of the psychology of sport is about mental preparation. It's about dealing with failure and adversity and rejection in the form of losing more often than not. And it is a lot about how you manage that mental side of the game, of course, because there's obviously a physical side, but the mental side, I would say, is just as important. So sports psychology, I think, really helped me to transition then into a sales career after university. Again, I kind of stumbled into it. I was going to carry on and do a master's and then a PhD and become a sports psychologist, hopefully.
Yeah.
But I rocked up at a kind of job center that actually happened to be on a university campus in Leicester, where I was living at the time. And I went in just to find some temporary work. And this lovely young lady welcomed me as I walked in and said, after a conversation, you know what, you should think about coming and working for us because we're looking for a new salesperson to do recruitment and to sign clients. And I ended up joining this recruitment consultancy on the university campus, which was all about helping students find work,
yeah,
either undergraduate or postgraduate work. And actually that lovely lady that welcomed me into the company 20 odd years ago actually ended up becoming my wife, Karen. So that's how Karen and I met at work. We worked for nine months together, me doing the selling, bringing on the clients, Karen doing the account management of those clients that I brought on. And yeah, we made a great team for that 9 month period. And we decided it wasn't for us, recruitment. We decided recruitment wasn't for us. We ended up quitting our jobs. We ended up then traveling around the world for a year together, which was amazing when we were 22 years old. And then we got back and decided that we wanted to set up a juice bar together. So we'd been inspired in South America by all these amazing juice bars, fresh smoothies, and came back and decided we wanted to set up a juice bar. We actually got quite far down the track. We'd found a property, we'd got funding, we had a business plan. And then we suddenly realized it was a crazy idea. The UK is not South America. We don't have the quality of fruit. We don't have the climate. We don't have, we probably end up juicing each other as well, just because, you know, it would probably be quite a stressful business to run. So I ended up actually working then. My first foray into startups, tech startups, should I say, was for a friend of the MD of the recruiter that we were working in before we were traveling. And this guy, the MD of the recruiter, said to me, look, we've got this mobile technology startup out of Bristol that would love to hire their first salesperson. I think you'd be great. And I wanted to get into tech sales as well. I thought this was the place to be back in the kind of early 2000s. And I took my first job. It was a bootstrapped company for the first kind of 6 months, but then we managed to raise a couple of million pounds from some high net worth individuals. So they weren't VCs, and it didn't go well. It's fair to say it really didn't go well. My founder at the time, the CEO, I think he thought he'd made it before we had. You know, we had some interesting pilots going on, and you know, we had a bit of revenue coming into the business. But he felt like he was Mark Zuckerberg already. We used to fly business class around the world, and it was a good early lesson for me actually about the importance of, you know, finding and establishing product market fit. You know, really managing the cost of acquisition and cost of sale, and just managing that burn rate really effectively.
Yeah.
And so I actually left that business after a couple of years. I ended up joining a large IT services company called Atos Origin, big French owned, 100,000 employees. I thought, I'm going to go and cut my teeth in a proper sales role than a proper sales organization. And I did that for 3 years, selling kind of multi-million pound deals to blue chip companies. So very, very different. And actually I realized I really didn't enjoy that. I didn't enjoy as much as I made good money. And I learned some kind of fundamentals of selling and sales process. I realized I didn't want to be a very small cog in a big machine and kind of that kind of enterprise selling and that long sales cycle, which it typically was, just wasn't for me. And I was quite fortunate at the time that I'd bumped into a guy whilst I was in that role called Andrew Mulvenna, who happened to be leaving Atos to set up his own business, a company called Brightpearl. And Andrew said to me, look, you should come and join me once we've raised our first round of funding. And so, I think it must have been 2010, I joined a company called Brightpearl. They just raised their Series A backed by Notion. And they were kind of in the ERP space. So they were providing a kind of order and inventory management. It combined CRM and accounting. So kind of like a suite of applications, but specifically for small businesses. And I spent a great 6 years there, leading the company on the sales side, on the marketing side, doing that in the UK, doing it globally, building a team out in San Francisco as well. And through, I think, probably three or four rounds of funding as well. So Brightpearl was subsequently acquired by Sage. But had a great like a really great experience of a VC-backed business where, you know, everything was kind of up and to the right. We were growing triple digits year on year, and just had a fantastic time and really enjoyed my time there. And then I left Brightpearl. I've done a few more startup gigs, generally kind of Series A to B, A to C, one of them in the kind of prop tech space with a company called Good Lord, where I was chief commercial officer. That was a bit of a turnaround job, that one. And then I joined a company called Trussell as well, a bit more of a B2C play. So in the kind of mortgage, more of a fintech type company, again, joined actually just after the Series B there. And yeah, really, really enjoyed my time in startups and kind of growing these businesses. Yeah. But always felt like there was a lack of a support network, a lack of a community for people like me.
Yeah.
And as much as I enjoyed those roles, I always found them to be incredibly challenging at times, and also quite a lonely, you know, role when you're CRO or VP sales of these companies. And I wanted to network with and learn from other revenue leaders, basically. And so probably about 5 or 6 years ago, I was kind of thinking about how to do this. And I stumbled across this group in New York called the New York Revenue Collective. I run by this guy called Sam Jacobs, and it just looked to be a supper club over there, a couple of dozen people. But I reached out to Sam and I just said, look, I'm thinking about creating a community in London. I see you're doing something in New York. I'd love to pick your brains. We actually ended up meeting a few weeks later. He was working full time for a company actually headquartered in London, although he was based in New York, and he'd flown over. We met for lunch, and and we decided that we would kind of partner up. I would create the second chapter after the New York chapter, so the London Revenue Collective. Just a little over 4 years ago, we announced the launch of that that organization. I was still full-time employed at the time. Really, I was doing it to scratch my own itch. I wanted to learn from and share my many challenges with other revenue leaders. I never envisaged it would become the community that it is today, which is now, you know, 9,000 members globally. We have chapters in probably over 100 cities. You know, in London, which is the focus that I have, so I'm purely focused on the London chapter. We've got nearly 800 members here, and it was through building the community that I just recognized that we had an opportunity. I saw that we had just some amazing talent within the group. You know, revenue leaders that had scaled, you know, successfully scaled multiple startups and scale-ups. And I wanted to try and find a way of unlocking some of that expertise that was in the community. I wanted to try and find a way of helping more startups and scale-ups avoid some of the many kind of potholes on that journey that they go on when they're scaling. And so it was what inspired ScaleWise. So about 2 years ago, my wife and I, Karen and I, were again, you know, as we do on a Friday night over a glass of wine, just thinking about, well, how could we do this? And and we had this vision for creating a platform, a kind of technology platform that would allow, you know, scale experts, as we call them, but experienced revenue leaders, VP and C-level revenue leaders, to create a profile on our platform, and for clients to be able to come in and to filter and to search and find the perfect scale expert for them that could help solve their scaling challenges. And the platform would enable them to message each other. It would enable them to, contract, and, you know, they could buy hours and book sessions, and you know, the whole payments piece would be handled seamlessly online. And so we kind of set out with that vision to build the platform and to enable our kind of scale experts to monetize their expertise. And we've been building that over the last 2 years. We finally launched it last month, which was great. Took us a while to get there, having never built product from scratch. Definitely got a greater appreciation for, you know, what my CTOs and CPOs were dealing with in the roles that I was and the companies that I was in the past. But also as the business grew over the last couple of years, and we've been really, really lucky that it's grown through word of mouth and through just the network that we've got. But as the business grew, we also recognized something else, which is that there's a growing number of revenue leaders that get to a certain stage of their career where actually they aren't really up for working, you know, all the hours for a single company, you know, blood, sweat, and tears, generally for pretty poor equity, I think it's fair to say, and also with pretty tenuous roles as well as it relates to the kind of risk around these hires, because we all know that the stat that the average tenure of a VP of sales now is 18 months. And so essentially it's a high risk role. And I think you get to a certain stage of your career where you think, you know what, is this really worth working 60, 70 hours a week for, where the job security isn't great, the equity isn't great. Yes, the comp can be great sometimes, but you know, actually, I quite like a better work-life balance. So I'd like to see my kids more. And that was probably one of the things that really inspired me to quit my day job and start ScaleWise as well, is that I was done with commuting to London, you know, from Leicestershire 4 days a week, not seeing my kids at all in a week. And so what occurred to us as we were building ScaleWise is there's this whole group of revenue leaders that don't just want to monetize their expertise alongside their day job with a bit of coaching and advisory work. But they, you know, they actually want to build a portfolio career. They want to take the leap from full-time employment. They want to do some fractional. They want to do some interim work. They want to do some consulting. And we felt like there was a great opportunity for us to kind of broaden our proposition from just a coaching platform to being a company that can provide this flexible expertise on demand, you know, whether that be on an interim basis or fractional basis or project basis. And so really that is the story of ScaleWise and how we come to exist.
Fantastic. I mean, I have lots of questions, but let's pick up on the latest thing you were saying, the, you know, more and more, and to be honest, that includes me, right? More and more people want to have a portfolio career. Right, so I think it's your dog barking, right? I put mine away, actually. I have a puppy as well. But that's fine.
I'm not too sure why she's barking. She seems to have settled back down again. She could probably hear some noise outside, but she's settled down again.
No, that's all good. If I say that makes it personal or personable to have that in the podcast as a background noise. I remember I once interviewed someone, he had like four or five corgis on his shoulders and all over him a few years ago. Bless him. But yeah, I think, and if I say that includes me as well. So I you know, most listeners would know. So I work as an interim. I actually, if I say, stole my positioning from you guys, right? I work as an interim and fractional COO, because I think it sounds nicer than saying, you know, I'm a contractor, right? Or I'm you know, I'm someone who goes in, you know, if I say on a part-time basis or whatever you want to call it otherwise. But I looked into portfolio career, you know, many, many years ago. Actually, I had a podcast guest who wrote a book 10 years ago on portfolio career. I came to, if I say, to the conclusion, because I, you know, what you described, if I say similar, you know, I literally went into startups for usually, you know, a year, 2 years, you know, they got acquired, stayed another year, took redundancy. And I did that, I don't know, 6-7 times, took redundancy. I'm like, why should I, you know, waste my time going to startups, you know, just kind of like, you know, helping them. Then I get the boot and then I start all over again. And, you know, I could just have a better life, earn more money, right? Higher day rate by going in as an interim. And it took me, if I say, some years to get to that and, you know, to position, if I say, myself and really going for it, right? But I think I really enjoy having different companies, right? Different input, you know, helping more people on the journey to build a sales team, to build a client success team, you know, to set up a marketing function. That's what I do. But I reckon was a lot of, or would you have seen, obviously you started 2 years ago, would you have seen a lot of acceleration for ScaleWise based on COVID as well, for people to say, oh, actually, I'm fed up of doing 70, 80 hours a week. Did that give you a boost of members?
Yeah, it definitely did. There was a few things that happened or that COVID accelerated. So I think the first thing was that this acceptance that, you know, we can lead, we can sell, we can market, and we can do more online. We didn't have to be in the office the whole time. Yeah. We didn't have to have someone, you know, sat that we can see, you know, in person. And so, you know, at the time when we launched ScaleWise, it was all about online. It was all about virtual one-to-one coaching sessions. And I think what we saw through COVID as well is then actually there was this acceptance around actually having a fractional leader or an interim leader that isn't in the office, that is maybe not even in the same country. And we were really surprised when we saw some of our UK clients that were starting to work with some of our US fractional and interim leaders, you know, on a completely different continent. And I think COVID almost made that acceptable, because we got so used to, everyone got so used to just dealing with with Zoom as we are now.
Yeah.
So that was the first thing. I think that another thing we saw was there was definitely this there was the initial layoffs that took place when COVID hit and it started to bite. And I think a lot of people lost their jobs. You know, we saw huge rounds of redundancies during that period as companies either retrenched from the UK back to the US or vice versa, or they were just looking to reduce their cost base because they weren't too sure how the whole thing was going to play out. So yeah, there was a kind of flood of candidates into the market, and some of those candidates were really good revenue leaders. So I think we got the timing, and we were quite lucky with the timing there, that we got quite a few people coming to us in those early months of COVID, you know, that were like, you know, I want a new role, but actually in the meantime, yeah, I want to do some flexible coaching or consulting or whatever it might be. But I think then the third thing that happened is people really took stock of their lives. You know, they'd gone from, like I had gone from commuting into London multiple days a week to then being at home and actually being able to take their kids to school and being able to put them to bed and seeing their wife more and being able to take the dog out for a walk. And I think, you know, some people then started saying, well, actually, I like this. You know, I want the same flexibility. And you know what? If my employer isn't going to give me this flexibility, well, you know what? I'm going to go and find it via a portfolio career. So definitely we saw these kind of shifts in attitudes towards work-life balance and flexibility and time management, which I think has really accelerated this kind of portfolio career movement as well.
Do you think that trend will continue?
I definitely think we're still in it at the moment. We're still seeing a kind of flood of people. And I think, you know, the fact that the recession is looming hasn't helped as well, because I think there's now being more layoffs. I mean, we heard again last week about Shopify laying off 10% of their workforce. So you're seeing more people get laid off again. And I think that can often be a catalyst for people to decide to do something differently. And so I think with a recession coming and depending on how deep and severe and long that is, you know, we continue to see people make different decisions about how they work and where they work. Longer term, you know, I would like to think that there's a strong demand for fractional interim, and actually then that demand from the client side will make it more appealing for you know, leaders to take that step from employment into a portfolio career. And I think we're not seeing, well, we are seeing that demand, but I think there's still some way to go. So in the US, I think the concept of fractional and interim is much more well understood. It's much more widely used. In the UK, I still think we're playing, and in Europe, I still think we're playing catch up there. You know, part of our job at ScaleWise is to try and educate the market about what the benefits are of fractional and interim leadership and why you should use it and when you should use it. And so we actually have a report coming out in a few weeks' time called The Definitive Guide to Interim and Fractional Leadership, just to try and help educate the market a little bit over here as well. But I think if we can educate the market and companies can recognize that, you know, yes, you know, they all seem to be familiar with having a fractional CFO, for example, or you know, a FD who can do a couple of days a week. They seem less open, or certainly some companies seem less open to that being a CMO or a VP of sales or a customer success leader. So I think if we can be successful in changing the perceptions within the clients and the kind of, you know, the companies that exist within the startup ecosystem, that this is a viable way of hiring. And it actually has a ton of benefits, and it can enable you to move faster, to save costs, to be more agile. Then I think we'll continue to see a trend towards, you know, more leaders getting into it, and also more companies wanting it too.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you, and I think I think it's going to be here to stay, right? I think that people want the flexibility, you know, they want to have the work life balance, and we now have the means, right, to make things work. I mean, I worked during lockdown. I worked for a German company for, you know, 18 months sorting out their sales team, right? And that could have been, you know, could have been difficult if it was all face-to-face, they had to fly over, et cetera. But, you know, COVID made it possible. So yeah, I think, and obviously, you know, based on the research I've done for the podcast as well, I interviewed Jonathan Younger, who writes a lot for Forbes. He calls it the freelance revolution and the great resignation, right? And I think that's here to stay. But it's interesting what you say about the recession, right? Although a lot of people say it's a confidence recession rather than anything else, you know, it's still a recession, right? And people will reevaluate their values as they have done during COVID. But yeah, I mean, obviously I would say that, right? I think it's going to be a trend to continue for interim and fractional. And it makes perfect sense, right? If you look at startups, you know, they can't pay for the expertise, right, full time. So getting someone in, you know, a couple of days a week, you know, or on interim just to set everything up makes perfect sense. So we talked about scale-wise, which all makes sense. Do you want to talk a little bit more about the Revenue Collective, or which is now the Pavilion, right? Obviously, we still want to talk about the Sales Impact Academy as well.
Yeah, I spread myself pretty thin.
Pavilion, no, it's all good. It's all good.
Yeah, but Pavilion. Is I suppose has always been a bit of a side hustle for me, something that I was doing alongside being full-time employed. Something which really for me was just spotting a gap in the market and a need that I personally had, which was that, you know, there was no communities for people like me, it seemed. You know, there was communities for founders and CEOs, and, you know, there seemed to be kind of sales communities, but it was full of SDRs and AEs. And of course, there was the odd leader in there. But I wanted to network with peers. I wanted to spend time with people that were going through the same things that I was going through, that I could learn from, you know, share challenges with. And so really that was the purpose of the Revenue Collective. It was initially just purely for VP and C-level revenue leaders, generally within fast growth tech businesses. And, you know, there was a high bar for entry. You know, you had to have multiple interviews, and it was kind of like an exclusive club. And then as COVID hit, we just saw this huge demand from people in all different roles within go-to-market. And we saw that actually people wanted community when people were stuck at home, you know, on Zooms, you know, not networking in London anymore, and going out and meeting in person. You know, they wanted to find other ways. And so we saw a massive demand for Pavilion, which was called a Revenue Collective until last year. Yeah. And at that time that we decided to create these different tiers of membership. So we have our executive level members, which is kind of the original community, the VP, the C-level leaders. But then we introduced the associate membership, which are kind of middle managers and kind of senior individual contributors. So the kind of manager and director level. And then at the back end of last year, we introduced the analyst membership, which is those in their first 5 years of work. And so we have these kind of three tiers. But my focus really is around the executive community, because that's really where a lot of the in-person events take place. We obviously had to pause those through COVID. So a lot of the value from the membership was coming from online events. It was coming from our online courses via Pavilion University. It was coming from our mentoring platform. We had a great bit of software called Lunch Roulette, where you could have virtual coffees with people. You get paired randomly with other members. But now we're doing in-person again. My focus is really on creating an amazing events calendar for our executive members, so that we can have really great dinners, you know, in a private dining room where we can talk through the challenges that people are facing in their roles and kind of harness the collective brain power of the group to help people combat those and deal with those challenges. And then, you know, we have roundtable discussions, we have happy hours. Yeah. We have a big summer birthday party coming up soon as well, our fourth birthday. So really it is a community peer-to-peer networking organization with a strong emphasis on learning and professional development. So things like our CRO school, very, very popular, 12-week course, CMO school, we have CCO school. So a bunch of learning programs that sit under Pavilion University that members get a ton of value from as well.
Brilliant. And then the last couple of minutes, Sales Impact Academy.
So this is a company that is very close to my heart, because the CEO is a friend of mine, a guy called Paul Fifield. He founded the business just before COVID, and really was focused on creating structured live online learning programs for go-to-market teams. And one of the first courses he wanted to create was a course for AEs. And so he contacted me and said, look, would you be interested in creating a course for AEs? And so I said, of course, I would love to help other AEs be better at selling. I ended up being introduced to a guy called Ben Wright at the same time as well. And Ben and I, you know, whiteboarded, you know, what this course would look like. It started as, I think, something like 18 one-hour lessons, and over, I think, 8 weeks or 9 weeks. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of heavy lifting going into kind of building that content and the slides and, you know, making sure that that course could deliver value online remotely to people around the world. And we launched it. Yeah, we launched it nearly coming up to nearly 2 years ago. We had a great bit of feedback to start with. So, I mean, yeah. It was a small group, probably 10 or 15 people or 20 people on our first course. But over the last couple of years, it's grown and grown and grown. And as is SIA as a business, they've raised some good investment over the last couple of years. And now, you know, we get a couple of hundred people on our courses consistently. We teach it. We streamed it back. So it's now 14 one-hour yeah. sessions over 7 weeks, so 2 hours a week for 7 weeks. Yeah. And it covers everything you can think of, from, you know, how to do effective qualification and discovery, through to managing effective meetings, you know, negotiation, yeah. how to write proposals that win. Yeah, you name it. Covers every aspect of the sales cycle, from qualified opportunity to close one.
Brilliant. So unfortunately, we've run out of time. Tom, if anyone wants to be in touch, is LinkedIn the best way to get in touch? And obviously, I put links for Scalewise and Sales Impact Academy and Pavilion in the show notes as well. Is LinkedIn the best way, or...?
Yeah, absolutely. You can just get me at linkedin.com/ Tom Glasson, and then you will find me in there. Yeah.
Brilliant. Then thank you so much for being my guest today.
Pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. Did you enjoy today's experience? If you did, please leave me a 5-star rating on the outlet you're listening to, and tell others about the show as well. Do you have ideas for guests? Any comments or questions? Please email me to podcast@valudapartners.com. And don't forget to check out www.valudapartners.com and subscribe to my monthly newsletter filled with insights on leadership and self-development articles. Until next time, this is your host, Volker Valuda.